You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's going on, everyone? Taylor Kyles here for CLNS Media, coming at you with another episode of Pat's Daily, brought to you by our good friends at Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of CLNS Media. And I have someone on today. I know you missed his face. I missed his face, and I saw him like last week. It's been far too long, but it's finally draft week. We got your draft week mailbag questions, and to help me answer them, I got my good buddy Mike Hadlick on, the host of one of the hottest new podcasts in New England, Behind the Mic. Buddy, how you doing? And how you feeling? The hay's almost in the GD barn.
It is. Thanks for having me. I'm honored to have made the guest list for draft week. We got, you know, guys like Connor Hughes and, you know, Alex Barth and Lazar and Mina Kimes and RG3. I'm the second quarterback, former quarterback to make the lineup this week, but I'll take it. Yeah. So no, this is I'm good. You're right. I'm excited that the hay is almost in the barn. I've been saying the last, you know, couple days that it's like the tangible pieces of this, you know, Patriots rebuild that we've been waiting for. They're finally in front of us, right? Like Mayo hired, Elliott Wolf sort of hired, you know what I mean? And now we have this quarterback sitting in front of us, and hopefully they put it across the finish line this week. So yeah, it's the draft has been kind of repetitive the last couple weeks, but you know, this is what we've done this all for. So it's definitely exciting to finally be here.
Dude, every time I see a report that's not Drake May likely to New England, my stomach does backflip. Yep. I'm like, we are so close to just getting a guy who, like, yes, we'll talk about him later, but like, yes, there's things to be worried about. And is his, you know, floor low? Relatively speaking, for a top three quarterback, yes, you can't deny that. But at the same time, like, I don't know if you follow me on Twitter, you already know. I hope if you're watching this, you follow me on Twitter. But I posted where I started charting him. I was charting him, and I was honestly like, this is discouraging. He is so inconsistent, where it's like, you know, two bad plays, great play, and then, you know, it's just up and down. Then you look at 2022, and it's so much good. And it's like consistent. His footwork looks better. There's not so much of the heel clickiness and just a lack of consistency. That's what honestly RG3 talked about was the consistency is really what's going to get him to be where he needs to get to. So just please, if he's there, don't overthink it. None of this JJ McCarthy. He's got a bright future, I'm sure. But like, we know what Drake May is. I feel like coach him up.
Right.
And just
then I think it's, yeah. I think the, you know, if we sit here or, you know, we're sitting there and Washington ends up taking May at two and Daniels is there, then I think, you know, we start to question, do they trade back? Do they do this? Do that? How much they like Daniels over May and stuff. But all the signs as of right now, since we're live, we can timestamp at 5:07 on Tuesday. It sounds like it's Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels 1 and 2. So if May's there, I'm with you. You take him. Stick and pick. I'm sure we'll have to answer that question 50 times throughout the mailbag. What we think they're going to do, what we want them to do, at least I do, and I know Taylor's on the same page, just take the quarterback. You mentioned the footwork. You mentioned the fact that they're going to need to, you know, groom him and work with him and develop him, but that's the plan. That's right. Why Jacoby Brissett's here. That's why Alex Van Pelt was hired, right? Like, it's – and yeah, I talked about this today on Six Rings with Andy and Fitzy, and, like, Andy wrote a column this week for WEI.com about how – it doesn't matter that Jacoby Brissett's here in drafting Drake May. And his point is like, you know, Jacoby's not a great quarterback. He's not really a bridge guy. Like, I agree with that, but it's important to have a guy like that in the room. And Andy was like, no, I agree with that. He's good. He knows Van Pelt's system. He can, you know, help bring him along, but he's not going to be the winner, but we don't need to win. And I guess that was kind of his point. But long story short is, you're right, the pieces are in place. They can develop this guy with what's in the room. So yeah, just take Drake. It's hashtag take Drake right now, and I don't want to see them do anything else.
Mike Tomlin said something like, I love coaches that are afraid to coach. yeah. sarcastically. Because it's right. like everybody talks about it. It's like, yeah, but with the ceiling is why you're taking him so high. Just like I we're gonna get into it, but yeah, just you right. know, it's kind of crazy to be like, oh, but he's such a project. Like, sure, okay. And mm-hmm. if you actually invest in him and you do the work, he's gonna be a Pro Bowler or an All Pro every single year. So
right.
Let's look at the chat real quick. Old Man Mob, my boy. Hello. Thank you so much for the love. I appreciate it.
Old Man Mob is everywhere. He's everywhere. He's always tuned in. He's that guy's dialed in, and I love it. So thanks, Old Man Mob. We love you.
Used to be me before I got in the biz, so I absolutely yeah. respect it. All right. Start things off. What do you think the extent of Jonathan Kraft's involvement in football ops is? I was waiting for it to not allow to Foxborough, which has been the norm, but it hasn't happened. So in case you haven't seen the news, which would be kind of tough, Diana Rossini reported that Jonathan Kraft is basically going to have some kind of say in the decision that the team makes, even though Elliot Wolf is heading it. Now, notably, Tom Curran went on the radio today, I believe it was WEEI, and did say that, one, the fact that the Patriots haven't gotten any real trade offers that they would actually entertain kind of makes it make less sense that Jonathan Kraft would have any involvement because everybody knows they need a quarterback. Like, this isn't a thing in the building where they're like, oh, yeah, but we could get a receiver. We could get a tackle. It's like, no, that first pick's probably going to be a quarterback. It just kind of depends on when. But if they haven't gotten the offers, it doesn't make sense. But Tom Curran also went on to say that he doesn't believe that's a sentiment. It's the same thing that's been going on year after year. Like, this is – Jonathan Kraft has not been the owner, but he's been right next to his dad this whole time.
Right.
He's seen it. He knows how this works. I understand the sentiments that, like, you know, Jonathan Kraft is trying to take more power and, you know, all the situation with Robert Kraft, everything going on. But, I mean, I agree with Tom. I think that this guy has seen that staying out of it, as long as you have the right guy in charge, works. If you need to get involved, as we've seen them do with Belichick, then, like, yeah, at some point you got to pull the plug. But I don't think he would be so short-sighted as to interfere with a group that's trying to gel and create a brand new culture. It doesn't make sense to me unless he's on a total ego trip, which, I mean, that's basically just speculation. So, yeah, I didn't think the report made much sense, and I think what Tom was saying, as someone who's really plugged into the building, probably aligns more with what's going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers to this. You can look back at even the Seth Wickersham reporting from ESPN right after Belichick's tenure ended, where he started to mention Jonathan Kraft and Robin Glazer as people who may be more involved in football operations should they get rid of Bill Belichick. And there's so much discourse around Jonathan, around ownership right now. People aren't happy with the dynasty. They're not happy with the way apparently Kraft interfered with Atlanta to try and hire Bill. So anything that has Jonathan or Robert's name on it right now is going to come out in a negative connotation. Now, I look at this, right, and this reporting from Rossini, and it is the second instance where we've heard that ownership has had an involvement in the football operations or the decision-making. But it is their team, and it is, like, their baby. And so when you could hand it over to Belichick for 20, 25 years, and after a while you trusted him enough to just take it all over, like Kraft had mentioned to us at that last press conference, when Belichick, they parted ways with Bill, and then Kraft came out after and answered some questions from us. He basically was like, well, Bill didn't have full control until a few years later. And at that point, I think ownership was at least being like a helicopter parent, if you will, for lack of a better term, where they let it happen, but, you know, they keep their eyes on it. And I think now that they've changed things over, it's okay for Jonathan and Robert to want to be in the know and want to be in the loop. And I think that's what Curran alluded to either yesterday or today with what you were talking about. It's like, yeah, they want to be in the loop with what's going on. They don't just want to hand it over completely to Gerard Mayo and Elliot Wolf. And not that they want to interfere, but they want to be involved in the conversations and figure out where to go with the franchise. Now, you mentioned the quarterback, right? Everybody wants a quarterback. Gerard Mayo wants a quarterback. Elliot Wolf wants a quarterback. Robert Kraft told us a few weeks ago he wants a quarterback. So I don't think they're necessarily in there telling them which quarterback to take, and that's just my opinion. I think that they might be saying, hey, we should probably try and get a quarterback. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. This is half a billion dollar decision if it turns out right, right? If Drake May, whoever it is, that second contract, that's $500 million contract. The Patriots are worth $7 billion, whatever they're worth. That's a lot of money, and it is ownership's money. So I understand fans being upset with ownership meddling, but there are a lot more layers to it. And, you know, that's a long-winded way of saying I don't really know what Jonathan's involvement is, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing if they at least have some sort of opinion on the matter and where it goes from here.
And the fact it's a business, like, it does make sense for ownership to want a quarterback, because you do have to think about marketability. You'd love to think it's just the football. And at the end of the day, yes, like, you know, Old Man Mob said, in your opinion, who should have final say in the draft? I think it's going to be Elliott Wolf, Jerod Mayo, and then Matt Groh. Maybe Cam Williams, you know, has some say, as he's like a really important person in that room. But I think they're going to have their cabal. If we've heard everyone's opinions, and this is how it worked in Green Bay. Ron Wolf did the same thing where, like Elliott, he listened to everyone. He wanted everyone to feel comfortable sharing their opinions so that you have all these different ways of thinking and you understand, one, where your staff feels, what, you know, everybody is kind of who everybody can get behind. So again, like, I'm not trying to keep alluding to the RG3 thing, but he dropped a lot of good points where he was saying,
when did you have RG3 on this week?
He was saying I asked about the double dip, and he was saying, like, yeah, it was a weird situation, but not because of me and Kirk. It was because different people in the building wanted different things. And that's where the division is. Obviously, Robert Kraft, the whole thing with Bill Parcells, I think he's learned. Like, he's not Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones, you know, you could argue whether or not he should be as involved as he is in the actual football operations, but he has a background in football. So he does have some level of say in the decisions they make. I think the Krafts, and Tom Curran alluded to this as well, he said they will hold people accountable. And I think, yes, they want to be in the room. Again, this is a business. They want to understand what the conversations are. The same thing happened with Belichick. Belichick still had to tell Kraft what was going on during the season. And even as Kraft alluded to, when Bill was let go, or, you know, they mutually parted ways, Bill didn't have all this control early on. You know, there has to be some level of oversight for a new organization. So I think it makes total sense that they do want to have some involvement. If you start hearing that they're saying, no, pick this person, which we have not heard, even Diane Rossini, it's not been reported that they're telling these guys who to draft. But if you hear that, then it's like, all right, alarm bells are going off. Something's going wrong. But I think it makes sense for them to want to be involved, because this is a billion-dollar franchise that goes beyond just the football. There's other things they have to think about.
So, definitely. And the other thing I'll say quickly, before we can get into actual football and stay away from the drama that you know and love, like, you know, Seth Wickersham, right? Everyone, Patriots fans, football fans, think Wickersham. They call him Wicker Scam, and they think his stories are nonsense. And to this point, right, like, a lot of the tell-alls and inside-the-walls type stuff, a lot of it's been relatively true. Now, he does doctor it up with creative writing, because that's what he is. He's a reporter, but he's zested up. He's a creative writer. He, you know, salt bays it with some stuff that suggests, right? But everything he says is true for the most part. And with Diana Rossini, a relatively, I don't want to say relatively, a respected NFL reporter, but she has also added some zest, doctored some things up. Like, remember the Mike Vrabel report a few months ago where she was like, well, he's intimidating in the room, and everyone's like, what the hell are you talking about? And Vrabel had to call her, and she sort of had to go then explain herself, right? So I'm sure the two of them have heard that Jonathan Kraft has asked questions, maybe tried to be involved and want to be in the loop. And then they spin it into their thing where, oh my God, Jonathan Kraft is running the football operation. And I just wonder how exactly true that is because of the two reports that have come out on it.
You also have to wonder, like, with Robert Kraft's age, are they maybe – I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Like, I don't want to – I'm not trying to speculate. Honestly, I don't really care.
Come on, speculate.
I don't care. But
what do you want
to
know?
The idea is that maybe Jonathan is trying to get more involved so he has a more intimate level of the business, because he'd be running it. You know, he's going to probably be running it in the next decade, if we're being totally honest. So, I mean, I don't really know what he does, again, behind the scenes. I don't want to say it's not my business. It is my job. I don't know. So, you know, I can only go off that. But I do wonder if there's just like, no, he wants to really understand what the groundwork is and the foundation is for this brand new version of the franchise. And again, this is not – I brought up Jerry Jones only to say I do not think that's what this is. Jonathan and Robert Kraft know that they do not know football. They are still very good business people. Good business people do not pretend to know things they don't know. They care about the things that they control and the things that are within their realm of understanding. So let the football people do football, but like any owner of a business, and you know, they're very adamant that this is a commodity that they have, and they were the stewards of that commodity. It makes sense for them to be like, you know what, I do want to still have some idea of what's going on. All right, I'm done. That's it. What do you think it would take for the Patriots to consider moving out of three? Football's back, baby.
It's this Godfather offer. Like, it has to be picks. It has to be maybe a player. If it's Minnesota, 11-23 next year's first, and Christian Darrisaw.
Yeah.
Or another first
or like Christian Darrisaw.
Yeah. So. Right. You're not going to get Justin Jefferson off their hands, but like if they put him on the table, sure. But I mean, it's got to be a lot. It has to be a lot to get myself off of Drake May. It should be a lot for the Patriots to move off of Drake May because they do have other holes. But if they can fill those other holes and push the quarterback back, then obviously. If you think of like the Raiders too, it's like 13, a future first. I don't know what their second pick is, but like I need more. Like I need players. I heard Mike Reese talk about it on a 98.5. I don't know if I'm legally supposed to say that I heard that because it's 98.5. No, I'm just kidding. But Reese said that like if they throw in Davante Adams, like now we're talking because that fills a role. Adams is more likely to be traded than Justin Jefferson. So like that's the kind of thing I need. I need it to be more than a haul. The Patriots need to win the trade in order for them to move off of free, in my opinion.
And even then, like a guy like Adams, like he's still older. Like he's a great player, but we're talking about a team probably like realistically probably 3 years away from like competing to go to the Super Bowl.
Sure.
Like even if they draft Penix and they get a great receiver, like, you know, kind of what we're going to talk about in the next question, they will be playoff contenders immediately because you have a good quarterback who's battle tested and a great receiver. It's like, all right, now you got a good defense. You got a pretty good offensive line. You're cooking with gas. But yeah, I think you're talking Godfather offer. And clearly, I don't think anybody's putting that on the table.
Right.
If Minnesota is serious about moving up, they got, I think also the extra capital had something to do with the Stephon Diggs trade. I know that was in part why the Texans were willing to initiate the trade offers. But yeah, we're talking about like four first round picks as like a start of the conversation, at the very least three and then some. So yeah, apparently no one's willing to do that. I think it's smart. You know, if you're the Vikings, you think you could probably maybe get like worst case scenario, Bo Nix. You're hoping for probably Michael Penix, keep him in purple. Maybe JJ McCarthy falls to you, but this is a good enough class where with their weapons, they don't need a Drake May necessarily. They don't even need someone like a JJ McCarthy who has this huge upside. You could relatively settle for someone like a Michael Penix Jr. who doesn't have the same ceiling, or a Bo Nix who doesn't have the same ceiling, because they can operate an offense and still be able to take advantage of all the crazy weapons and the good offensive line that they've got in front of
them. Yeah, and I don't necessarily think that Minnesota's going to get desperate. Like, yes, they added the second first-round pick to try and trade up if they liked a quarterback that much, or they wanted to go get Drake May if they really wanted to. But they also, like you said, they have other players on that team. Like they have a really, you know, they have a good supporting cast as is. So instead of having to pay too much, they can just play the draft game and wait till 11 or wait till 23 or even wait till past picks 4 and 5, see what happens there, see what the Giants do, and then they can make their decision. And they could just sit at 11 and 23 and pick a pretty good quarterback and a really good wide receiver, or vice versa. Like they're working. Long story short, is they don't have to get desperate. They can make a better trade up for a quarterback and not have to send the haul to the Patriots that everybody's talking about.
Yep. And then, so they're old man mob active. What if the Broncos offer you Pat Surtain, who just got his fifth year option picked up, Cortland Sutton, who I'm very interested in, but you know, not necessarily in this realm, this year's first and next year's first for pick three.
So it's 12, pick 12. They're 2025 first, Sutton and Pat Surtain.
I'm not really into that, to be honest.
Oh, I don't know, dude. That's a haul.
It's
a pick swap next year's first, because 3 to 12, you're not really getting two firsts. You're swapping your firsts, you move down next year's. But I mean, man, Cortland Sutton fills your wide receiver run, and then Pat Surtain and Christian Gonzalez. Are you kidding me?
Like, obviously, that'd be awesome,
but. Then you miss out on franchise quarterback.
That's my thing. It's like the picks turn into players that are cost controlled, that are younger, who they can rebuild. You know, I'm not saying that Surtain and Sutton wouldn't be like a culture fits or anything like that, but still, man, like
and you got to pay them sooner. Like you said, cost control with the draft picks is huge, but they're also more proven than the draft picks that may not, you know, they may not that cost control, right? It's risk versus reward there, where they're cheap, but they might not also pan out. Cortland Sutton and Pat Surtain are also obviously proven veterans. So,
but then you're also,
I would probably
trust your front office and your coaching staff too to do the job that they're being put in place to do. So, I mean, I'm not going to act like it's not intriguing. I personally just want them to stay put, like take the quarterback, rebuild your franchise, like not mind your own business, but like, you know, trust your strategy and do what you got to do again, unless it's an absolute haul.
Old Man Mob, I know you're still watching. I'm gonna tweet out that trade scenario later, and I'm gonna give you credit because I want to see what other people have to say too on the Twitter sphere. So that was a good one. Yeah,
it will be your conversation starter. All right, there we go. What do you think about the Patriots drafting Marvin Harrison Jr. 3, then trading up for Michael Penix Jr.? So honestly, I think trading up for Michael Penix Jr. would not be possible. You'd have to give up so much capital. You'd probably have to get into the top 15. Now I will spin this, and this is the scenario that RG3 brought up yesterday, where if you end up getting a haul and you're in a position where you can somehow draft like Michael Penix Jr. and then you get a really good receiver, that's the kind of thing where I'd be a little more interested. Like, I think that's why it's been reported. That's why they brought Penix Jr. in.
Right.
Obviously you bring him in, it's probably because you're thinking if we trade, he'll probably be around. That's a scenario where, because you're immediately very good, I would like it. I still would like the young guy who you can mold the way that you want to, who has fewer deficiencies, especially deficiencies that you can't really fix, and then be able to work from there and build around him. I just don't think Penix has the same ceiling, although I think he's a baller. Like, it sounds like a slight, but I just think that Drake May is that good and can be a truly elite player. I don't think Penix I don't want to say he doesn't have the physical ability. I also think he's going to compete in the playoffs, like on a good team. I don't want to discredit him at all.
No, I just
like May better as a prospect. Although, like, if you get somebody like a Brian Thomas Jr., it's like, well, it's tough to say no to that. So what do you think? That's a tough situation.
When I look at bringing in quarterbacks and upside and what they can ultimately do on the field and do for your team, like the final sort of goal, the goalpost you have to get through, is winning a Super Bowl, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at the top 3-4 quarterbacks in the NFL right now, call it Mahomes and Burrow and Josh Allen. Mahomes, Burrow, Josh Allen. Am I missing someone? Like those three guys, Justin Herbert, I guess, right? Those guys are like the elite of the elite, the top of the line now. And they were all taken within the top 10 in the NFL draft. Top.
Lamar's like one of the only outliers.
Yeah, that's true too, Lamar. You're right. But you look at those guys, and those are the guys who have high upside, athletic ability, strong arm. I'm not saying Penix doesn't, but to me, it feels like Drake May is somebody who you can give the keys to your franchise, right? And you're obviously going to have to surround him with something, but he can make more happen with less. Where Penix, exactly. We've literally seen it. Where Penix, I'm not taking anything away from him, but he did have a superior offensive line at Washington. He did have three elite receivers who were going to go in the first three rounds of the draft this weekend. He did end up taking a team, and now he played great. Don't get me wrong.
And he was good at Indiana, to be totally fair to him.
He was good at Indiana. 100%. Well. No, he was good. The point is, though, you have to build and hit on more things around Michael Penix in order to get through that Super Bowl goalpost, in my opinion, than you do with Drake May. Drake May can make people better around him more so than I think Michael Penix can. So that's why I'm with just stick and pick, take the better prospect early, and you can fill in the wide receiver gap a little bit later on.
It's just Penix is such a hard one to talk about because, like, he's a dog, man. And I know. Like, pun intended.
Did you read his thing on the players?
I didn't read the whole thing. I saw some of the quotes, and I'm like,
yeah.
It's the kind of guy where if you do draft him, you're going to be excited about it.
100%.
Like, he has limitations, but he's a great deep passer. He's athletic. He's impossible to sack. There's so many things to like about him. But as Spectadiz said, I just wouldn't trade anything for Drake. Like, I'm sorry. That's just where I'm at personally. Maybe I'm a little smitten. But I think when you have an opportunity to get someone who's that special of a talent, like, honestly, I think Penix is more special as a person.
Yeah.
And then it's like he also has so many tools that it's like, yeah, he's clearly going to be good. But I just think Drake May is absolutely special. Speaking of which, we're going to answer this fun question. Right after, quick word from our friends at Prize Picks. Be right back. Get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason. You can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with basketball and hockey entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app.
PrizePicks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. I personally love PrizePicks because they're super easy to use, easy to navigate, and they offer injury insurance, so your entries stay live even if one of your players gets injured. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what make PrizePicks the number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today and use the code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
All right, so I think we can keep this one relatively brief. I just felt like we had to address it. Would you like to go first? Because I want to like see if you hit enough points that I don't have to go on like to black out and just start ranting.
Why may? Okay. I kind of like when you go on your rants, but I'll give my quick hitter.
That's friendship.
Yeah, I mean, shit. He's got a great arm. He's played multiple quality seasons in college. He fits what I think the Patriots want to do in Alex Van Pelt's system. He does need help with footwork, but Alex Van Pelt is what we've sort of gathered over the last couple months. He's a footwork guru, and he really hones in on that. And so the way it's set up here with Brissett and the system and what they want to do and how May can end up working out, if you can make that happen, it very well could be a slam dunk. He does have a low floor. I understand that, and people are worried about some of that stuff. But at the end of the day, we mentioned it before with the coaching stuff. If you want to coach and you believe in your coaching, then you can turn this guy into a superstar. And he has superstar ability. We've seen it in college time after time after time. So if you sit in there at number three, you take Drake May. I think it's that simple. You need a quarterback. Quarterback's the most important position in football. I understand wide receiver is going to be there, and wide receiver has become the second most important position in football. But right now it's Drake May. I don't think it's that hard. They shouldn't. If you sit in there, they should not overthink it. God damn it. Just take Drake May.
I agree. And for me, like, you can talk about the physical talent, but I don't think he gets enough credit for how smart he is as a player. And that's the thing. I feel like when I, you know, advocate for him and I show all the highlights and all that fun stuff, it can be interpreted as like, oh yeah, but he's just like got the strong arm. You're just looking at upside. I wouldn't be excited if I saw him just making these plays, but I was like, yeah, but he's like, he's not really feeling the pressure very well, or like, it doesn't feel like he really knows what he's seeing. This is a guy who started when he was 20 years old. He was a starter, was 2022's ACC Player of the Year. Mm-hmm. 2023 obviously took a step back, but I looked at the stats. He was actually more accurate than he was. There were just more uncatchable passes, which is like the spray misses, again, the footwork. But he was even more accurate than he was in 2022. And the big thing with me is, one, so you start in the front. He is so good at feeling where pressure is coming from and standing in the pocket. Like, his feet will get jittery sometimes, but it's not so much that I think he's nervous, which is like you see that like Jordan Travis, where watching him, I was really excited. And I feel like every time someone was in his lap, you see him throw and back up. And like, you know, sometimes there's a level of self-preservation. Every quarterback does it to some extent. But I feel like Drake will stand there and take huge hits knowing guys are coming at him when he knows like there's a blitz coming or something like that. He'll usually, and this is, it bites him sometimes because he'll drift away. Sure. But he's such a long strider that sometimes he'll end up right behind his tackle. So it's not always great in that department, but the fact that he senses it, other things you can work on, but that feel. And then you talk about the back end, where a lot of these guys, like you look at Penix and Jaden Daniels, I'm not saying they can't hit other routes, and a lot of it has to do with their scheme, but it's so much like go ball, fade, where if you look at their like explosive throws or like their deep passes, pretty much all the same. May's hitting everything. Right. If you're playing cover two against him, he's killing you down the seams. If you play quarters, he's hitting you on double posts or scissors concepts where they're just throwing that post over the safety's head because he didn't play with enough discipline. If you're playing cover three, he'll hit you with the crossers. Or if it's man coverage, he'll hit you with the fades and the like.
He does it all. And when you talk about every throw in the book and they can make every throw, and sometimes people think that as like a negative connotation when Bill was like, he can make every throw. And everyone's like, well, when he says that about someone, it means he's not that good. Drake May is that good. He makes every throw in the freaking book. He can do everything you need a quarterback to do. It's that simple.
Yeah. And there's things that need to improve, obviously. But here's probably the biggest thing. He's freaking 21 years old. He's going to turn 22, I think, at some point this season. But still, like, I think that matters because, you know, there are some coaches who, like, when it comes to building their staffs, they like people who haven't been to a lot of places because it's like you don't have the pollution of, like, all these different systems. Mm-hmm. I can teach you what I want to teach you. And obviously, Drake May had two different offensive coordinators. Like, his coaching situation was different in college. Mm-hmm. But it's not like Jaden Daniels Or it's not like Michael Penix Jr., who's had multiple different coaches and like different settings.
At multiple different schools, right.
Right, and like all this different change. Like Drake was at the same school, had a couple different coaches. Alex Van Pelt, because he's not in that like McVay tree or the Shanahan tree, he's probably going to be here for, you're thinking like at least 4 or 5 years. This is someone who, like we were talking about during the offensive coordinator search, you want someone who can help build up your young quarterback long enough that by the end, hopefully like their first contract at least, this is someone who's fundamentally sound, understands a certain way of going about things, and can then take that Tom Brady type of role where it's like, this is my offense. Like, I know what I want. You're building around me, and I can help kind of, you know, steer us in the right direction because I have a strong foundation. So, you know, that went on longer than I thought it was going to, but hey.
That's why May, God damn it.
That's why May.
You know?
All right. If May goes number two, will it be Daniels, a trade down, or the best player available? If the latter, will it be Alt, Marvin Harrison Jr., or Malik Nabers?
Oh, boy. Realistically, I think it'll be Daniels. I think they'll stick and pick. I think so, too. I think they're ultimately going to be comfortable with either one. I find that so hard to actually believe. Like, and only because you got to have a preference. They obviously have a preference. And it's like, okay, we're sitting here, and then say the preference is May. When it becomes Daniels, do you really take him, or do you sit there and maybe listen for 10 minutes on what Oakland, Las Vegas, the Raiders have to offer, right? Like, at that point, it starts to, you know, you start to question yourself a little bit. But at the end of the day, I do think they're going to ultimately take the quarterback. If they do trade, I don't think it's going to be best player available, not Daniels. If they're not taking Daniels, I think they're going to trade back and get more capital because this class is deep enough where they can move back 8, 9, 10, 4 spots, whatever it is, and still end up nabbing. Maybe not Harrison, but Nabers, Joe Alt, Brock Bowers. I know we're going to probably answer a question about Brock Bowers later. I don't know if you loaded that one up, but I don't think they're going to take the tight end anyway. But regardless, it's going to be Daniels. I think they're in the we're in the third spot. We like all three quarterbacks. We're going to take whichever one falls to us.
Yeah. And the Brock Bowers question was in the mailbag. It was not a bad question. It was very good, but there's only so many we can do. And I just don't think there's any chance they take Brock Bowers. So it was a good question. I'm just telling you, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It's going to be Daniels. I think I don't see them trading down because I think Jaden is one of those pro ready quarterbacks in this class. Like, he processes very well. There are certain things he can be more consistent about, but he, you know, for the most part sees the field the way you'd want a fifth year to see the field, like super max senior or whatever to see the field.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, there's still room for growth. The arm strength thing does kind of scare me just because I keep thinking back to that last game last season where they're trying to throw one of these wins and literally they had to flip the field before it was even possible for Bailey Zappe to start actually making downfield throws.
Right.
But still, I think that they're probably sold on him. He's too talented, I think, to pass up on as much upside as J.J. McCarthy has.
Well, I was just going to say that. If J.J.'s – they love J.J. according to basically all the reports. Apparently he had a kick-ass interview. He's had a kick-ass interview with everyone. He has ultimate charisma. He's a leader. He's a winner. We've seen that he can do some stuff on the field, right?
God.
So if Daniels is there and they're not in love with Daniels, do they trade back with, call it, Oakland? Why do I keep doing that? The Raiders.
That's weird, man. It's been a while.
Yeah, I know. Antonio Pierce's Raiders love Jaden Daniels. They worked together wherever, I think it was when he was in high school Arizona or something. In Arizona State, you're right. So they have a connection there. Do the Raiders go up and take him? The Patriots are sitting at 13. Do they then trade up for J.J. McCarthy with the capital that they now gain with Oakland? Holy moly. But yeah, you get my point.
Write it on the screen.
I know. The Las Vegas Raiders. This is insane. But yeah.
Do you
think that that's a possibility? Because I think they like J.J. maybe more than they like Jaden Daniels. Because there hasn't been much smoke around what New England thinks of Jaden Daniels. It's just kind of like, yeah, they like him. Yeah, they like him. Yeah, they like him. But there's been a lot more smoke around they love J.J. McCarthy.
I just think it's so convoluted, the situations you'd need to actually be in range to take J.J. Because I think you would like to be at least in the top six because somebody can just jump up and end up taking. So, you know, I think it's just so tricky. I know you floated some, like, trade scenarios around where – what was it again? Remind me.
It was
one of those it's so crazy it might work kind of things where I was like
– If Chicago wants to get nuts and trade up to number three and take Marvin Harrison Jr. So now it goes Caleb at one to Chicago, Jaden at two to Washington, Marvin Harrison Jr. at three again to Chicago. The Patriots are then sitting there at 9 with 4 and 5 with Arizona and the Chargers sitting there. And one of the receivers is gone that people think they're going to take. So then does Arizona want to trade out? So you move back up from 9 to 4 and take the guy in Drake May that you wanted all along. Yeah, a lot has to happen. Crazier things have happened, though, like you said. It's so crazy, it might just work. Nobody thought that Houston was...
If you're trading up and trading back, think about, like, what would you even gain? Like, another pick or two?
That's what I didn't... Obviously, not that that's not what I thought about, but that's not what I calculated out yet. Because there is a net gain there. I just don't know exactly what it would be. And would it be worth it in the long run to potentially miss out on Drake May? Right.
It's like, to play all those games, I feel like it's... I feel like you
these need are the games that I
conversations already ready.
Yeah. These are the trade up, trade down scenarios that for the last month and a half I can't stand. And now that we're 3 days out, I'm like, let's just have some fun and just throw it against the wall and see what happens. But
honestly, all right, yeah. Real quick. What's good, Low? Say, buddy.
Yo, our friend.
Would you say it is more likely the Pats trade up from 34 or trade down from 34?
That's a good question. Because, like, I see value in both.
Yeah.
There's a lot of value in both. Obviously, the fifth-year option if you get back in the end of the first round. But 34, pick 2 of the second day, everyone resets their board. Everyone gets those 12, 13, 14 hours to kind of see where they're at. And guys know what they want to get. So 34 becomes that much more coveted the next day than it does right now. Does trading 34 for a veteran wide receiver count as trading down? Because I think that that's still on the table.
That's true. I don't know.
I don't think it counts.
Ooh, that's starting to turn into fire.
I know.
Which makes sense. The whole fifth year thing probably wasn't happy. My thing is, the biggest one is the run on offensive tackles that I feel like is going to happen. If Patrick Paul is right, he's been saying he's going to go in the first round.
Yep.
Who goes in the first? I think you're like, we have to take Kingsley Suamataya if he's still there. Suamataya. I finally, thanks to the beast for Dane Brugler, I know how to say his name, Suamataya, which makes way more sense than what I was saying, American as hell, Suamataya. That's crazy now that I actually have it right. But I feel like that run on tackles is going to start getting scary because you still want a guy who's got high upside. Like, I love Javon Foster. I love Travis Glover. If they are your plan, and I went through some permutations with my mocks where I'm like, hey, what if you just got them? It still feels too risky.
Yep.
Maybe, you know, next year you're probably still going to have a top 15 pick. Maybe you get a tackle then. Still, I just don't think it looks good if your first three picks aren't on a receiver, quarterback, and a tackle. You know I've been hard on Xavier Leggett. Mm-hmm. I'm coming to grips with the reality that, one, Carolina's probably going to take him. Like, it makes too much sense. He's also that's the only place I want him to go because, one, Patriots don't have to worry about him. I don't have to see him in Buffalo and feel like crap every time they play him or anything like that. And also, it's really cool that he would get to stick and, you know, be close to his family. That would be awesome. Mm-hmm. But also, I just think when you have, like, Javon Baker, who I feel like could fill a similar role, but is also a better route runner and is looser, might have more upside in terms of, like, what he can do. And then just the talent that's there, even though there aren't that many X receivers, the way I see it is like, hey, if you want to get like Bub Means is my binky, where if you don't get the X receiver, I feel like him or Jalen Coker or even Tajon Palmer, honestly, is really growing on me. Very under the radar. Watch him if you can. Okay. He's a freak. Legitimately, like, dude is like 6'2 or 6'3, ran like a 4'4, legitimately fast. Where, like, if you're playing lesser competition, you'd like to see guys, if they're fast, they're running away from people. Mm-hmm. There's multiple plays where he catches like a slant and is gone. He also has this crazy touchdown where, like, it was thrown kind of behind him and he's like on the sideline and goes back and, like, it's nuts. I'm not going to try to reenact it. That was crazy. But I think there are enough X options where you can get, you know, if you really think that maybe a guy could be X, but it's more of a Z kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm ranting again, but
no, that's okay. That's what we're here for. I'm excited for it to, like, these conversations are great, like I said, and we talk about the permutations that can happen. Yeah. I'm super excited to have that one permutation and just analyze that. Like, it's fun, but there's so many what ifs, there's so many maybes, and it's like, I don't want to say let's just get it over with because these next 3 days are going to be wicked fun. But the one thing I will say with Bub Means is, and I know people have pointed this out before, but I wouldn't discount the relationship, what he had with Tyquan Underwood.
For, like, sure.
They worked together there for a few years. I'm sure they know, you know, he's given them the inside scoop on what's good, what's not with him. So that's definitely one to watch out for.
Spoiler alert, I did have my final mock draft where I did my dream scenario, and Bub Means was my second or first. Well, he was one of my sixth round picks. because it does feel almost inevitable. Like, I don't know how much influence he's gotten from other teams, but with Tyquan being someone who's already coached him, route running is really the biggest issue in consistency with Bub. That's someone who can hold him accountable and knows how he ticks. Like, it just makes so much sense. Although he doesn't offer much in terms of special teams, and he's not a great blocker. Those are the things that kind of scare you, because it's like, well, if you're a late round pick, those are the things you need to be
right at.
And that kind of
bring that. Yeah, you got to bring that value.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a good question. Let me see. I honestly got lost in the sauce a little bit. Here's a fun one. We're kind of on the conversation of, like, one, basically to sum up the last point also, I don't think they're going to trade back, because I think it's either you take a tackle or you trade up and get someone that you really like who you think is an immediate impact player.
Yeah.
But with that conversation, it's like, all right, you know, if you do decide to get a receiver and you don't necessarily get your X, is it reaching for McConkey at the 34th pick? I don't think it's reaching at all. I think he's someone who might sneakily go in the first round. I just don't think – I think he's such an overlap of what they have right now. He's a really great player. I think he's going to have an awesome career. Mm-hmm. He's also small, and I think they need size. Like, I want someone who can box guys out and has the mass to most likely stay healthy. Like, there's 100% injury rate in football. We know that. Mm-hmm. But as much as I like McConkey's game, the size does worry me, especially on a roster where Kendrick Bourne is coming off a torn ACL. Pop Douglas, you know, more head injuries, but still, like, something you have to think about. KJ Osborne is not really a health issue, but he's just on a one-year deal. So as much as I like McConkey, I don't think it'd be a reach. I just don't love the fit when, you know, I feel like there's other guys who more fill what you need and could also be high-impact players, if not in year one, and they're more rotational guys, at least soon down the road.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm basically just going to repeat what you said, but I think that I don't think he's going to be there at 34. Like, I think that that run on receivers, just like the run on offensive tackles, is going to happen. We're going to see so many quarterbacks, OTs, and wide receivers go in that first round. So someone might go up for McConkey. It's not a reach for him to go there. I just agree that there's a lot of overlap there with – there's not that true X, the one-on-one guy that Elliot Wolf told you about the other day, the one that can sit on the outside opposite a 3-by-1 and beat a guy man-to-man. I don't necessarily see that being Ladd McConkey. So – they still need to find that fit in their offense, and McConkey is just not that. But I like him. He's a really good player. He's fast. He can get off coverage. He does it all for and did it all for that Georgia team. And I think someone's going to be getting a really good player. But I just I'm with you. I don't necessarily see the Patriots doing it at 34.
And I do think that Wolf quote was very telling, where they said he's like, "Yeah, we got all these, but we don't have that specific guy." And it's like, oh, well, why wouldn't they try to get that guy? And why would they wait until the fifth round? Like, in my headcanon, they were going to double dip and take two guys who could play X with one who maybe is more of a Z, but still, like, with refinement, could be that one-on-one winner.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Maybe switch it up a little bit. We talked a lot about quarterbacks and receivers. Okay, here's one. What round should New England start to consider drafting defensive prospects? Is there a first-round defensive prospect that they cannot pass up on?
Every mock thought that I've had with defense, third round is, like, the top of the top for me. They really need to fill these holes. There were holes last year that they had to fill, and they passed on it to go defenders. They have a really good defense. They have a couple guys on their defense that can still develop into, you know, into high quality players. Obviously, Christian Gonzalez, Marte Mapu, Keon White. Like, those were the three last year when you still needed an offensive tackle and wide receiver. You passed on those to get your young defensive players. Don't do that this year. Wait till round three. Wait till round four. If there's a guy you really love, off the top of my head, like, I mean, if you're sitting there and I saw like a mock or like where the Patriots traded back today and they take Kool-Aid McKinstry at number 23 to be your other cornerback opposite Christian Gonzalez, like, I guess do that. But even still, there's more need than another cornerback right now. So I'm round three, round four for them. Go get your other cornerback, your developmental cornerback, someone there. But don't overthink this. You got to fill those three needs in quarterback, tackle, wide receiver, and you got to do it at the top of the draft.
I agree. Like, when you look at the defense, there's no glaring needs right now.
Right.
I think they need supplementary pieces. But you look at the defensive line, Barmore, Judon, Jennings, like, those are your guys. We're like, obviously Judon long-term, probably not, but at least this season you've got your guys. Juwan Bentley, Jelani Tavai, and then also Sione Takitaki, who I think is going to have a significant role. Those are your guys. The secondary, Christian Gonzalez, Jonathan Jones. I don't think you can count on Marcus Jones, but at least those two guys, health is obviously a concern, but they're still here. So it's not like you have to draft somebody. You really like to get depth. And then at safety, I don't really think safety is even as big of a position of need as people make it out to be. Cause what are you going to do with Marte Mapu? You're going to give up on him after 1 year, where a lot of the time you ask him to do something he wasn't that used to doing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to me. So unless you get like a Daron Harmon type where you can get him at a good – wait, when did Daron go? Was he second round pick?
Third round, I believe.
Third round? Like even – I think even that's too rich. But I don't think there's any defensive need that is so big it justifies getting it over a tackle or a receiver. That just does not make any sense to me. Fourth round, yes, because while I – they so I did my roster breakdown. You can check Twitter. They do have a lot of free agents next season. But there's also a ton of guys who you can completely see them re-signing, like Devon Dodshaw, Jeremiah Farms, Daniel Ekwale, Jelani Tavai, Jonathan Jones.
Draft and develop. They want to re-sign these guys now. They're not going to let these guys go like Bill did. That's Elliot Wolf's mojo. He said it again on last Thursday. Like, that's what they want to do. So they're going to probably sign a lot of those guys.
And you look at, like again, the starters were Dodshaw, Tavai, and Peppers. The free agents, they're not going to break the bank. Those are guys where maybe it's like a maybe not a Duggar situation necessarily, but you give them a little extra money, you overpay a little bit. There's nothing wrong with overpaying if you're a draft and develop team because you probably have the draft capital where you're saying, all right, I like this guy, but if we do have somebody behind you, I'm sorry, we're going to have to let you go. That's just business. So, yeah, there's just nobody that I like so much and I'm saying, no, get this guy even if he slips. You're just not in that position. You did that, like you said, you did that last year. Right, I hope you had fun. You got a great player, Christian Gonzalez, but you got to address the offensive side of the ball. All right, we'll wrap it up with this little drama with the football. How did you – and a little more Drake May. Well, cherry on top. How did you feel about Rodney Harrison coming out strongly saying no Drake May? Two, what do you think becomes of Elliot Wolf after his contract expires, which I believe is in May? Two May questions.
Ironic.
One, I don't even know – I maybe should have looked it up. I don't even know – I didn't hear about Rodney Harrison saying anything about May. To be totally honest, I respect Rodney Harrison. I do not think that he's, like, sitting up – watching film, scouting the prospects, especially quarterbacks. Like, I'm sorry, I know a lot of these guys operate. It's like they'll watch enough. They have researchers who do some of the work for them and give them the numbers and, you know, all that good stuff. But see, the quote was, there's no way I'm spending the number three pick overall on Drake May. There's no way. If you're saying there's no way, I don't think he watched him. I'm just going to be totally honest.
It's
the same thing if you're saying, like, even for me, I, as much as I like him, I will always acknowledge there are flaws. And there are things you need to be worried about. I'm not saying, oh, my God, why wouldn't you want Drake May? If you don't, I'm like, no, I get it. But he's my guy. Like, I'm riding for him. I don't care if I'm wrong. This is what I believe based on what I've seen. There needs to be some nuance in that discussion. So I think that immediately disqualifies. If you're like, no, there's no way. Or yes, absolutely. What are you thinking? I think that's, like, not really fair. There has to be some nuance. And with Wolf, I think he gets re-signed. Like, this is a guy where people in the league are saying the Patriots are lucky to have him. And they are. They're very lucky he didn't jump ship once it got kind of clear that Belichick was taking power away from people and not really giving them opportunities. Even if they do hold some kind of interviews or whatever, maybe it's just – maybe Elliot Wolf leads the charge and he's like, no, I just want somebody who can, you know, be a consultant, be my right-hand man, something in that department. But especially if the draft goes well, I think it would be absolutely wild if – while it does make sense because he's been the one who's leading everything since last year. So the draft is kind of the culmination of those things. So it's not like, you know – this draft goes well, and it's like, well, the continuity. It's like, no, things pretty much reset because then you start working on the next year. But, yeah, I just – everything he brings and the knowledge he has and the connections, the fact that he helped build your coaching staff on offense, those are all Elliot Wolf's guys, and they're almost all reputable coaches who have a good track record in the league. Obviously, also goes through Van Pelt, but that familiarity was a big part of it. So, yeah, I don't think it would make much sense to move on from him unless he botches this draft.
Yeah, so the Rodney stuff – quickly, there's this it's a talking head thing, and I mean that's the business we're in, right? Sometimes we have to be talking heads and try and do things. I don't want to say it's for money or for clicks, but there's it's the circle of content and you know what we live in right now, and so for Rodney to say that, if he hits. Everybody knows Rodney Harrison said Drake May stunk, and then he gets to be known as the guy who said Drake May stunk, and he was right. Same with Merrill Hodge, who in the past hit on Johnny Manziel. Everybody goes back to that because Merrill Hodge. Right, and we still remember it. If he hits on Drake May, we still remember it. And so, and if Drake May is really good, nobody really cares what Rodney Harrison would say. So sometimes you take these swings at these things, right? That's my read on the Harrison and May thing. As far as Elliot Wolf, he's going to be here. Honestly, my belief on this is, and this is just an opinion, if they want to hire a general manager and name someone their general manager, they're required to do an external search. because you can't just elevate from within. You have to apply by the Rooney rule. You have to bring in guys outside. You can't just name Elliot Wolf your general manager. If they want to do that, they have to hold interviews. And that's what I think it's going to end up being. I think it's going to be a process to eventually give Elliot Wolf the GM title. Now, they didn't want to do this right after the season because they turned this thing over very, very fast. As you know, we went to Bill Belichick's thing on a Thursday, and they announced Gerard Mayo as the head coach on a Friday. And they said, we're using who's here right now and starting our draft process. So I think they trust Wolf. They couldn't name him GM yet. They used what was in the building. They immediately started that transition of power from Bill to Mayo and Wolf. Mayo had it written in his contract that he could be the GM or the head coach rather. So they didn't have to do external hires, Rooney rule, stuff like that. They have to abide by it by Wolf because that wasn't in his contract. Now, after the draft, they reset, they open it up, and they potentially name Elliot Wolf the GM. I think that's what it is. I could be wrong, but that's been my sort of read on it this entire time. I think he's going to be back in May.
The Rooney rule is a great point. Honestly, one that I forget because it feels like it's never brought up, even though when people do talk about the Wolf situation, it's just like, oh, why haven't they given him a title yet?
Right.
And this isn't the old regime where Mayo said, I think titles matter because if you do move on from us, we want people to know what you did. Right. So you have that on your resume because he did head coaching searches and he went to interviews. And I'm sure it was hard for him to be like, yeah, it was my defense. It just didn't have a name on it where everybody assumes it's Bill's defense. And obviously Bill has final say, gives his thoughts. Cause why wouldn't you want to listen to what Bill Belichick has to say about your defense? But Bill is a head coach. There's only so much time he has to actually look at one side of the ball. He's really looking at it at a macro perspective,
right?
Whereas Gerard was the one who was leading meetings and talking to players and helping build game plans with Steve Belichick. So Steve. I have total brain fart, but yeah. Going back to it. Yeah. The Rooney rule is a very good point because I don't even know if they're allowed to name him the general manager without a search. And then
they have to do an external search and that takes up time. Yeah. Right. No, that's fine. That would have just taken up more time at the beginning of this thing where they were able to turn it around. Like I said, they were able to turn around quick with Mayo, flip the switch, start their draft process, start the quarterbacks. They wanted it to be Wolf probably, but they weren't able to do it again because that would have just taken up time. So again, that's been my read on it. And I think that's what's going to end up happening.
Also, one thing I'd love to acknowledge, Slater.
Yeah,
he's back full time, baby. That's awesome. So we think he's basically Jack Easterby, right?
Yeah, Jack Easterby, right-hand man.
The Patriots version of Jack Easterby,
I was going to say the Patriots version of Jack Easterby, and maybe not the Burge Najarian that Burge was to Bill, but sort of a guy who can be a sounding board.
That's Nancy, right?
Yeah, right. But for Mayo, who can basically just be, like I said, a sounding board, someone who Mayo can go to be a liaison to the players, where Mayo was kind of always that when he was in a secondary role to Bill. Everyone said, well, Mayo's just like a player. He gets it. He knows it. But now you have to take a little bit more of a head coach control role. So now you can have Slater to be that sort of middleman between the players and the coach.
Yeah. Also, I said Robin. Robin is like...
Yes, Robin is the
best. Yeah, Robin, my bad. Sorry, stupid me. But yeah, this is very cool. So Mike Reese did kind of break that he's going to be player development, team management. One, it's really, really cool. Like just from an outsider perspective, the fact that two guys who got drafted together were with the team for their entire playing careers now are two of the most important people in the
building.
Right. Slater, I mean, just the idea of him, like I was only on the beat for a year and was genuinely very upset that I might not be able to like.
Yeah, I know.
Actually, honestly, in his, he was one of the people where I didn't really talk to him very much just because I had so much respect. I'm like, I don't want to go up to this man if I don't have something very smart to say. Like, I was kind of nervous. Now that he's back, I'm like, nope, if I see him, I'm introducing myself. I'm doing the whole thing. Also, didn't help. Do you remember the time that I accidentally called him Brendan because I was asking about Brendan Schooler?
Yeah.
And he goes, Brendan. And I was just like, what? What did I say? Oh, God. Yeah. I didn't know my case, but he was awesome.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I spoke to him one time, and it was at the end of the season. I just basically congratulated him because everybody knew he was retiring. And I was like, I was a fan. Now I covered you. I never spoke to you because you were always, there was always too much of a crowd around you, but thanks for everything. So now we get to talk to him again, hopefully if he's around. So
excited. Great for the culture. All right. Thanks everybody. This was a blast. Mike, let people know what you got dropping soon. I know you got a special guest coming soon. Who's in the beat report.
a special guest on Behind the Mic tomorrow, 6 p.m. So everybody, if you don't follow, go ahead and follow at Behind Mic Pod on Twitter, Instagram. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. It's an old friend. I'll leave it at that. Old friend, NFL draft guru around these parts who I have worked with in the past. That's all I'll give. That's all I'll give the chat. I'm not going to give it anything else. You can figure it out if you're here and you're listening. So you can tune into that tomorrow at 6 p.m. And then WEEI, we got all the Patriots draft coverage coming down on WEEI.com. And I will be live on WEEI 93.7 radio with Rich Keefe, Andy Hart, Fitzy, Chris Scheim, all the guys. We're going to be 6 to midnight on the Rich Keefe draft party on 93.7 WEEI. And so if you want to, tune into that as you are listening to all of your Patriots coverage, as we hopefully have Drake May to talk to on Friday afternoon in Foxborough.
Yes, sir. Great stuff, buddy. And in terms of a Pats Daily perspective, tomorrow we got some hometown heroes on the show. We're still going with the 2-episode-per-day format. In the morning, all the listeners, I'll break it, a little spoiler, we got Evan Lazar. He is our third mock draft guest. Had a blast with him, obviously, as always. And then we're going to be back in the evening, with Alex Barth. We're going to keep doing our college show and do our final mock draft, get 2 mock drafts in one day. We're going to go over our dream scenario together with what we want for the team after we did all quarterbacks, all receivers, all linemen, all none of those things. Now we're actually just going to do a conventional draft with who we want. But thank you, buddy, for joining me. And thank you all, as always, for watching. Now take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And we will see you next time. Peace, y'all.